talking with Blake Perez. He serves on the Planning Commission. He ran for City Council, served on the Cultural Arts Commission. Today, we're talking about Brea politics, the lack of local media, how you can get involved in your community, and who we're both supporting for Brea City Council. Let's get started. So I'm so excited to invite Blake Perez on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you, Jody. I'm excited to be here. I've been following your podcast for a while. One of the few resources for local political news, so appreciate it.
Yeah, we live in a media desert for local elections and local news, and it's really unfortunate. And something that we'll kind of touch on because it's hard to get information. So I first was introduced to you when you ran for city council in 2018, and it was so exciting for me to see, you know, young and new ideas. You've since gotten involved, which is not always the case. I have to give you a lot of credit because I see people, and with the League of Women Voters at candidate forums, I see candidates that are very passionate and run for school board or run for city council, and I'm thrilled to see that. But then I never see them again. And if they don't win, they disappear. And I'm really pleased that you, were appointed to the Cultural Arts Commission. You served on that. And I know that you really promoted a lot of what our city does well. Now you're on the Brea Planning Commission. I want you to talk a little bit about that. But we're also going to dive into Brea elections. Brea is one of the few cities. It seems like the very north part of Orange County has resisted. La Habra, Yorba Linda, and Brea still have these at-large elections. And so we have everybody in Brea will get a ballot with four candidates for city council and two candidates for treasurer, and there's no district segregation of geography. And so let's talk a little bit about how do people get informed. I always tell my students, don't vote on yard signs. That is not a predictor of how much support somebody has. It's a predictor of how much money they have.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So one thing, I really recommend people watch the candidate forums. I learn a lot from participating in them. And I think for community members, it's really essential. Who are you supporting for city council?
Yeah. So right up front, I am supporting the two incumbents, Christine Merrick and Marty Siminoff. I just view that, the direction that Brea is going, steady leadership at the helm is necessary at this time. We do face a lot of challenges, I think, coming in the near future. As the state, has its budget deficit, usually when that happens, the state tries to claw back money it typically gives to the cities to accomplish programs that are assigned to these cities by the state. We're right now in the process of updating our general plan for the first time in over 20 years. Working on a new specific plan to really tackle what the Brea core is going to look like in the future. So we just, having a steady hand, I think, is very important. If you really want to boil it down, just look at our neighbors and see all of these cities that have a sales tax on the ballot because of their revenue issues. Yeah. And you look at our city and we don't have a sales tax on the ballot. We don't have any city initiated tax on the ballot. Our city's done a good job of looking at other ways to invite investment in the city, businesses, working with new development in the city to see how can we ensure that our community continues to benefit as we grow.
Yeah. And La Habra has a sales tax. Buena Park has a sales tax on this ballot. Fullerton was considering one. They have big deficits and are facing some cuts and challenges regardless of whether or not they ever choose to put a sales tax on. And so to your point, I was really impressed I feel like I'm pretty informed. And I learned a lot from the candidate forum about the state of our city. I learned a lot about some of the initiatives that are underway that I was really excited about. What is it called? The hydro helicopter?
Yes. The helihydrant.
Helihydrant that will help with fires because that's a huge problem, particularly for our canyon, but also our hills. And so that kind of preventative cost saving or, making sure that we have emergency management taken care of. I think they were talking about fire trucks being purchased, and those are huge, monumental amounts that get spent at once.
Most definitely.
I was really pleased that we're not deferring those kinds of purchases, that we're in a good financial place, that, you know, pensions are being considered and funded with these surpluses when we have them. And as you said, you know, California's budget is cyclical and we're going to face some of those challenges. But I was really impressed with what the city leadership has done, and why I'm also endorsing Christine Merrick and Marty Simonoff. I think it's really important. But let's talk about some of the campaigning that's going on, because I think there's a lot of what I feel is unfair campaigning that the mailer that Steve Vargas's PAC funded brings up some questions for me and others. I've had a lot of people asking, you know, why is one of the council members so invested and why does he have a PAC to fund others and what does he want to do if he gets a majority? And so one of the candidates that didn't come to the candidate forum, so I don't have any information about him besides the fact that he's on the planning commission, but I've heard from many, he doesn't attend. He doesn't show up. He didn't show up to the candidate forum, and that could be a scheduling issue. I do not know. But what's your experience with him on the planning commission, Tom Donnelly?
Yes. I mean, he's a nice person to work with when he's there. He's, you know, he does it when he is there. He is focused on the work at hand. But I am concerned about the number of absences. And then you're asking for us to look at your record and then to advance to city council, which I think a lot of people unfortunately have the misconception that you have, you know, two meetings a month and that's it. Maybe a few other meetings with senior staff, but really you are on subcommittees, you are on regional boards, you are representing the city at these other events, at these other with other bodies of government that really mm-hmm. influence the kind of resources and services that our community receives from county, special district, the state, through our own advocacy with the League of Cities. So it's so much more of a time commitment than just two meetings a month. And right now, Planning Commission does not have, we do have two scheduled meetings a month, though, if there's no business, that's often canceled. You know, so to me, it's sort of, you don't necessarily need a perfect attendance, but when you're starting to run up against the council's attendance policy, it raises some concerns. And so I'm just curious as to why, if you don't have time for that, why are you going to pursue the city council position? That's right. That's really what stands out.
Absolutely. And I've heard that concern from many people. And that doesn't, you know, without local media covering, without information getting to the voters, you often just see a ballot with a name and a ballot designation. And one of the reasons that voters often look for a commissioner is because we know that you've been involved in the city, that you're invested, that you're giving back already, that you're knowledgeable. With Planning Commission, all of those regional boards and outside the city activities kind of gives you a perspective of what's out there, of what other cities are doing. And so it sets you up well as an informed member of the region, not just the city, to possibly be considered for city council. And so it's concerning when somebody isn't there, and that's just not information we get. What really struck me at the candidate forum is that, you know, I'm sure lots of people in Brea have seen the huge signs, big banners that say it's time for a change. And I didn't get any sense of what Bill Klofstad would change from his answers to the candidate forum. They were, you know, parroting back what Marty and Christine were already talking about. I didn't hear innovation. I didn't hear real criticism of what is happening. I didn't hear anything articulated for why he or Tom believe that it's time for a change. And if that's your campaign slogan, it seems like you might want to mention.
Right.
Do you have a sense of what the agenda is?
On the outside looking in, the only change they seem to want to really pursue is just change who holds the seat. It does not really seem a dramatic change in vision for the policies or change in direction of what we're trying to necessarily do. I do have concerns about, you know, temperament and kind of the way that someone would act in the council seat based on some of their affiliations and past actions. But you know, when you actually just kind of boil it down, if you just are curious as someone, you're like, I don't care about those other things. I only care about policy. You watch the Canada Forum, you look at their websites, they say change, but they're touting the Integrated Crime Center, which is something done by the current council. They're touting the financial prowess and the investments in the you know, CalPERS accounts, the investment in our just our city reserves. And even the helihygiene issue is something that we're already actively working on. And the one of the challengers just is contending that should be done sooner. But to that point, you know, many of our neighbors who we have mutual aid agreements already have helihygiens in place, including Yorba Linda Water District, which is really just right one hill over. Right. And so it's the only change I see is they think they should be the ones to continue this vision. And that's to me is not a campaign for change because you're not really offering any alternative vision.
No.
To what's
no.
being done.
Yeah. I just felt like I heard platitude after platitude and slogan after slogan, and there just wasn't any actual policy differences, and there didn't seem to be any actual content to what the slogan is. So a lot of money to spend out a mailer. That money is coming from Steve Vargas's PAC. That PAC seems to be funded by casino money, which is really concerning. I don't know if the incentive of those funding, and this is all available public information on the Secretary of State's website for campaign finance. I can't get an idea of, besides Steve Vargas having an incentive to hand select a majority that would vote for him by helping these candidates win election, I don't know why the people funding that PAC would want to be involved in Brea politics. Do you have any sense of why that is?
I don't. I can only guess, just being someone who's worked with PACs and other capacities, that you know, you can't, if you donate to a PAC, you can't earmark how that money is being spent. So they could just understand, they just say, we want to donate to your PAC, and he's involved, and that PAC is involved in other statewide races. I think that one is involved in and the Senate race that's just south of us with the former Assemblymember Stephen Choi against Senator Josh Steve Newman. Choi.
Yeah, State Senate 37.
Right. So, I mean, I can imagine that maybe they're more focused on that, and then sort of, but because you can't earmark, he gets to determine where those funds are going. So the idea of Brea getting a casino or anything like that seems preposterous. I just don't see our constituency, right, our community ever being accepting of that. But it is curious. I mean, that's one of those things about, I often see people look only at what is filed by the candidates and what they receive directly, and sort of, and I remember this happening in our last cycle where there's a lot of criticism of candidates who, oh, you got a lot of developer money, you got a lot of this, a lot of that, but we are quiet on this front because we just don't see where that funding is coming from. And like you said, it's publicly available, but the Secretary of State's website is not always the easiest to navigate. And if you're an average voter who you have very minimal time to look into anything, I mean, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of time.
It's a lot of work. No,
unless you're doing it professionally, and you, or you know someone who does it professionally who can, you know, let you know, it's really difficult. And
yeah,
I mean, you talked earlier in the opening about the media desert, and I think that's kind of what we're really struggling with, is that for Brea especially, because some of our neighbors have still online blogs. I know Fullerton has Fullerton Observer, a number of other community blogs that are very active. But for Brea, we rely on Nextdoor, we rely on certain Facebook groups. And yes, some of that information is good, but it's sort of a trust but verify situation in a way that's, you still want to do with other media, but it's even more, it's even less researched than.
It's even less researched.
And
when the people that kind of are the folks who do a lot of research are not interested in pursuing it, then you don't get that information and don't really pay attention to the lack of, you don't notice what's not there. And Fullerton Observer does such an incredible job. And, you know, they just did a Where's the Money Coming From article on the city council. And I heard about that from so many different people that I didn't even know read the Fullerton Observer of, you know, where's Fred Jung getting $250,000 for a city council race? And why are all these outside people that aren't from Brea funding his race? And that information should be a discussion. There's nothing wrong with it. He's not breaking any laws, but voters have the right to have that information. And I think, unfortunately, we're on the other side of it, which is, it's a lot of work to look up those forms. And Brea, unfortunately, redacts the names on the public forms. So when I go in and look and see, you know, I was interested, I wanted to see who was funding these candidates, and I don't see the names. And yeah. Most other cities, I think Bray should change this, most other cities redact the addresses.
Right.
And leave the names. Mm-hmm. And I understand that I could email and get the unredacted forms because public information. But as a professor, when I assign this to my students and I want them to look for transparency, that is a big red flag that someone at the city would know that you individually had asked for that information and you have no idea what happens to that information. You know, there's no law that says that the city employee has to have confidentiality of who has requested it. So why we want it to be public. So it's even harder because then there's the additional step of you have to actually ask for the unredacted or get that information. And then it seems like an inside club. So.
Exactly. And you don't want people to feel like, because when that happens, it really feeds a certain degree of cynicism. And I really find that to be very unhelpful. And I think that really feeds sort of the nationalization of local politics, where you see these national issues that are bleeding down into local politics in a way that I don't think is helpful because of what a city council person is focused on. I forget who says it, but I know the famous quote of, you know, there's no Republican or Democratic way of filling a pothole. And, you know, that's something that I think is very important to keep in mind because you want to, these are nonpartisan offices. And I know the county parties do sometimes get involved. For Bray, at least, we've thus far been able to avoid a lot of that overt partisanship in a lot of ways. Our city council kind of breaks in sort of different kinds of lines. There is always the divide. There's always different camps. I think this is the case in every city you go to. And it's hard to figure that out, though, unless you're very actively engaged or if your city happens to have a good regular local news coverage and attention. And I want to give credit to Voice of OC and Terry Daxton, who they do what they can. But Brea is a small market. I mean, that is just how it is. And so we generally get an article in Voice of OC maybe once a month, once a quarter, depending on what the issue is, but not regular active coverage like in Irvine, Anaheim, or even Fullerton.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And Brea does, you know, it's kind of fascinating. And Christine Merrick, when I had her as a guest speaker all those years ago in my class, I was really excited because she wasn't affiliated. She was no party preference. And I was like, that really speaks to the nonpartisan nature of Brea local politics, that there's not going to be a backlash against that. There's not going to be this exclusionary factor because she's NPP. And you know, so we have Republicans and Democrats and NPP, and it doesn't seem to show up. You know, I don't think most people in the town would necessarily know the party affiliation. Anaheim breaks on different lines where you have Democrats running against Democrats, and it's the Disney versus labor and different things. There's natural alliances that sometimes shift in local politics. And I think what I have been happiest with Brea is that we haven't had extremists.
Right.
Even when a political party might support one candidate or another, we've kind of avoided the extremists that we see that's taken over Placentia Yorba Linda school district, that's taken over some cities, you know, Huntington Beach. I don't know if they have a city council meeting where they don't sue somebody or get sued or ban something. But that was one of the big red flags for me with Bill Klovstad at the candidate forum when he was asked who are the people who are his endorsements from. And he named the biggest extremists in Orange County politics. He named the Orange County Education Board of the Barkeys and Ken Williams. He called him Kenny, which I didn't even know that was a nickname he used. Good for him. And then Leandra Blades, who, you know, really moved Placentia Yorba Linda to an extremist position that the policies have suffered from as a result, the schools have suffered from. And, you know, I guess we reap the spoils of getting Joey Davis as our high school principal because he was forced out of El Dorado. And the El Dorado parents were devastated to lose him. And he just spoke at the public comments about that process of the extremists really doing that. And so that concerns me when somebody is running with those backers. So lots of people are concerned about Steve Vargas getting a majority with this funding that is so overt. But I'm also really concerned about the extremist nature. And what are your thoughts on the commissions? Is that something that you're seeing, that people are getting experience with extremist backing?
I don't see it on the commission level, but I am concerned. I mean, I look at these other cities that have had extremists, and I'll point to it's, and I look at LA politics as well. So it's like extremists at both ends. And I don't want to pick on one side here, but both, and I don't want to be a both siders either, but
But Los Angeles certainly had, Los Angeles certainly has massive examples of the extremists.
Right. And it becomes sort of where they focus on performance in sort of like a theatrical kind of way rather than getting the work done. And that's, I mean, you see that in some of these other cities that they can't even retain professional staff. And when our cities are set up, we need professional staff. You want to be good, city council is responsible for being a good check on professional staff to what the community actually wants and needs, and sort of setting that guidance as the elected officials. But at the same time, you need city staff to enact your vision, and you need competent, capable leaders to be at the top there. And when you see a city that elects more extreme individuals, and then suddenly all their top management resigns or leaves or is forced out, you have to wonder what is going on that they can't keep people. And that then bleeds down into how your community is run. As a city, we are a full service city. We have our own fire department. We have our own police department. And we have a city of fewer than 50,000 people that relies on excellent management and leadership to keep all that running, in addition to an elected city council that is very focused on good policies that, support us financially, support our leadership and being able to enact a vision that makes sense. And so I am concerned that you would have these associations that it would bring that kind of, I don't want to bring that kind of attention to Brea. Brea has always been, relatively conservative city. I don't think that's any kind of secret, but it's a well-run city. We always talk about our roads being well-paved, well-done. And it's very clear that it's because they're so focused on results. They're so focused on building a consensus and avoiding issues that just are not in the purview of a city council. A city council should not be making these kinds of decisions that are around foreign policy or around, kind of issues, health and all these issues that kind of are more appropriate for a state or federal decision maker.
Off topic.
Right. Just stay on topic.
Just stay on topic. There's plenty to do in your lane. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. And I think it is really important that voters who want to retain that, understand that the incumbents are the only options at this point for the city council. I've heard some people talk about, maybe we should have term limits, and that's something for another day. Like, that's not the decision that's in front of us on the ballot. The decision that is in front of us is on whether or not we want to invite extremists onto the board that don't have any other vision, that don't have content that would convince me. And the other thing that you said that I really do think is important is that we have incredible professional staff that have long tenure. And that has been, when I was studying public administration at Cal State Fullerton, a lot of the guest speakers were from Brea because of the amazing work that they were doing within the city. And, in the old days, we had a redevelopment agency that developed our downtown as a vibrant center that people would be attracted to come here. Obviously, the city council and the planning commission and the staff have worked so incredibly hard for a lot of upgrades. And, the tracks are amazing. And one of the things that I hear a lot from people in other cities of why can't we have nice things like Brea?
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at the types of businesses that want to invest here. I mean, you look at the project with the Brea Mall and Simon Property owns a number of properties throughout the country. And when COVID hit and construction costs spiked, they killed a lot of these redevelopment projects, but they kept ours in place. It was one of the few they kept in place. Yes. So we've been able, we're in our mall. I mean, I've gone there around wintertime and it is still a very active mall. And I'm very excited for when the Sears property has been redeveloped and we see the space be reactivated in another way. It's amazing what we're seeing, the types of restaurants we're getting, the types of, our tracks trail, the growth of that, like all these things that are happening is because we have stable leadership that doesn't invite lawsuits from the state. It doesn't bring down a bunch of media coverage, and it doesn't really divide our community. I mean, I think a big part of it, every candidate talks about a small town feel, and a lot of voters talk about the small town feel. And I think that comes from the ability that we can be neighbors. We can disagree on national issues, and but you still are very focused. Like, how do we make Brea a great place to live? And that guiding light, I think, keeps things stable that we've had for so long. And the reason why I'm trying to fight so hard to stay in Brea, despite, you know, the challenges around housing costs, and trying to advocate on behalf of my peers, who I see so many of them leaving because of this.
And you know, I was struck by how much you spoke for so many people who want to stay in Brea when you were running in 2018 about the need to really plan for the future. And I think that that our current council has done a really good job of inviting new voices to be commissioners, to advise the council, and hopefully be the next generation of our elected officials, because I think we really do need those voices. It's not that I'm pro-incumbent 100% of the time. I think there is a time and a place to pass the baton. And I think, you know, I know that Christine Merrick in particular, because I've talked to her about it, is, you know, saying, like, how do we get more diversity of thought? How do we get more diversity of ideas and age and perspectives of really representing the whole city? And of course, different ethnicities is part of that, but age is a real factor. When you look at some city commissions, it's like, oh, they're really all one type, whole bunch of lots of retired folks that are on that. And there's nothing wrong with having those voices. They are part of our community and need to be heard, but it can't just be speaking with one voice.
Right. It's about balance. I mean, it's a lot of fun for me on the commission because I think you really see on the planning commission that kind of a lot of that diversity really happening, because you have, I mean, I'm the youngest one on the commission. Someone in the mid-30s, professional, grown up here. But what's fun about it for me is that another one of my colleagues was my middle school science teacher. So I have gone from being the student to a peer and colleague.
Yes.
Which is always a fun joke that we both get to share when people are like, oh, you guys seem to know each other. And it's like, yes, because I was in at junior high and took his science course and also knew him through Boy Scouts. And but I think it is about balance. It's not, oh, we need to get rid of everyone. Change for change's sake doesn't work. And I think it's important to have institutional knowledge, especially as we talked about earlier, the lack of reporting of media. Yeah. So you don't really, a lot of the history of what went into decisions maybe 15 years ago that, and because of the way government works, the decision from 15 years ago really impacts what you're doing today. It's important to have some of that institutional knowledge. And, you know, I think one of the, you know, with Marty's been on the council for a long time, you know, and he's, I think, what really draws the sort of question of term limits. Well, to me, elections are term limits, but also you need to be thoughtful on how you make your change, because if you have a high degree of turnover, you're going to lose a lot of the institutional knowledge. You're going to lose your own influence as a voter because you're really leaving it to outside influences who might have been there longer. And you see that, I think, at the state level, where you have consultants for committees who outlast the committee chairs in a way that they can just say, yeah, you'll be gone, but I'm still going to be here. And so you really want to be, just every election, you should be thoughtful, look into the candidate forums, talk to your neighbors, try and find information as much as you can, talk to the candidates. I think that's the thing I love about small city politics, is that candidates are very reachable. You can talk to them very easily. There's not this sort of gatekeeper that, oh, you got to talk to my scheduling assistant. You got to, find, it's just, no, you can just usually find their phone number, call them, have coffee with them, talk with them, get a sense of who they are as a person, which I think is very important. And people, I wish more people would take advantage of that, especially at a local level, because I've always, you know, not always, but since my own run for city council and just before then, I've really grown to appreciate how much of your day-to-day life is impacted by your local decision makers versus federal. I mean, I work with an advocacy organization and, you know, I have a federal counterpart. And when I talk to him, it's like maybe one bill you get enough co-sponsors to be exciting
next year.
Whereas at a local level, you'll see a policy return. They'll say, here's the introduction.
Yeah. Here
it comes back in 90 days. We're going to talk about it again. You can have something done within 6 months that will have a major impact. So I think
a major impact. And closest to the people, you know, I mean,
right.
Blair Stewart just does such a great job on social media. And you know, I that's not for everybody. I understand that. But, you know, I've found a number of new businesses and restaurants because he posts about them. I had a student who ran into him only because he recognized him from the Instagram. So there's that kind of making the small town virtual.
Oh, way. Very much so. I run into people at Ralph's all the time. So now it's like, you know, there's some mornings where you're like, late at night, you're like, your gym shorts and a t-shirt and sandals. You're just like, I just got to get something really quick. And then suddenly you're running into a community member and you just, yeah. So now it's like, I can't, every time I go out, I got to try and be somewhat professionally presentable, just in case.
A little bit. yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important to understand that our city council members in Brea are really accessible and they're out in the community and they're talking to people. And I think that I really do attribute a lot of the decisions that they make, that they're listening and they're reflecting that, and that you aren't forced to go to public comments just to be heard, which I really appreciate. There's a cost to going to public comments. You have to, you know, go to the city council meeting and wait and talk, and that can sometimes be unnerving for people. And so being able to access these people outside is really helpful.
And I'll add about Brea and sort of the accessibility too is, we don't require you to fill out a speaker card in order to be heard. We ask you to do it, but it's not required.
Mm-hmm.
Public comment is at the beginning of every meeting. You're not forced to just, you want to talk about something not on the agenda. You got to wait till the end of the meeting to bring it up. And we still do, at least, you know, for our planning commission, you can still give a comment virtually and you can email your comment. It'll be read aloud.
That's great.
It's a way you can, Brea makes it very easy to be engaged if you want to pay attention. They just released an app that you can follow Brea TV, because I know not all of us have cable anymore or satellite.
That's amazing.
Brea, and they have a podcast, Brea Talk.
When I talk to my students about where to find candidate forms in their area, and you know, I say there's a public TV channel, and I'm like, oh, none of you have TV.
Yeah, if you go to the Brea TV app, you can also find the forum listed as one of their latest shows. And you can watch city council meetings, state of the city. So our city does a great job at investing in how do we connect to the community. And so whenever I hear people say, I didn't know that was happening, here's how you do it. Because we do put that information out there. And that's also why I get really frustrated when I see some candidates who try and make it seem like there's all this shady backdoor stuff happening. And it's like, no, it's just, you just need to pay attention and it's all there. I know with Bill, I'll give him credit because he's the first candidate I've gotten a lot of text messages from at a city council level. I don't think I've ever seen candidate be using technology in the local level here, at least using it. But I was disappointed that his most recent text was an attack that tried to insinuate that two city council members sued over the transparency measure from 12 years ago, Measure T, saying that they sued for his $800,000 to retain benefits. But I would say just to people who receive, have you not received that message?
Oh, I have not.
Oh,
is absolutely not true about the people on the ballot.
Right. And the message skirts that because it just says two city council members. It doesn't say who or, you know, when that actually happened. And if you try and Google it, you're not going to find anything because, again, media desert.
Correct.
I would just say for voters who are being bombarded this year, we live in a competitive congressional district. Right. It is jarring to be streaming sports on a Sunday when you're going back and forth and then interspersed between these really negative ads as an advertisement for going to the Bahamas. It's a weird experience. Just if it raises your emotions, maybe question what you're thinking about at first. If you see a message that doesn't name names and it doesn't cite sources, I would just throw it in the trash. Delete it. Make sure you do your research. Don't just say, oh, well, I saw this message that said two council members sued over this issue. And I go, who? It doesn't say.
Right.
But it's insinuating and it's playing on people's unfortunate cynicism around city council.
Absolutely.
And local politics that they're like, oh, of course they would have sued over transparency and to get their benefits back and, you know, all of that. But it's like, no, that's an unfair insinuation.
That's really unfair and really unfortunate. And I just, it's just not the kind of politics that people in Brea want. And, you know, I don't want to condemn somebody for association of family members, but, you know, the people of Orange Unified School Board are well aware of the havoc that was caused by the extremist Madison Minor, and Bill Klovstad is her father. And so there is the question of what is the agenda behind this campaign? Because the extremist positions led to a recall in Orange, and police were called over campaign signs and just really nasty politics. And I definitely don't want to invite that into Brea. I kind of appreciate that Brea politics tends to be fairly boring. It's what a lot of communities are desperately begging the voters to give them back of, you know, make school board meetings boring again. It's what we kind of want. We want to be able to trust that we elect people who want the best for our cities, that are making good decisions, that are sifting through all of the information and those binders to really ask the right questions. And shout out, by the way, to Mr. Madden, an incredible science teacher who, you know, my kids had at the junior high. He's done such an incredible job and such a passion for science. You know, just community members that are giving back in so many, many ways. So as we kind of wrap this up, I want you to tell people how people can find out about the commissions. How can somebody join a commission, apply to be on a commission?
Right. So the best way is just go to your city's website and look up, and usually under the government tab. A lot of these cities use the same website vendor, so there's very similar format across the board. And find you know, the commission that, you know, meets what you're interested in. And I would say usually for something like planning commission, council members will want to see you be involved in other ways first. Mm-hmm. Because to be a planning commission, you really have to know the community, be connected with the community, because the decisions you're making have a very big impact on the community. And sometimes depending on the type of decision being made, it doesn't go to city council unless the decision is appealed. So very serious, very important commission. Mm-hmm. So if it's your first time, maybe
entry level commission,
not quite.
But cultural arts, where you got started, is an incredible,
I think it's a great commission to start. It's a lot of, and that one, you know, that one, maybe Parks and Rec is also fun, but I can say cultural arts is very fun. I mean, especially for Brea, where we have concerts in the park, we have our own theater, our own gallery, and you get to work on, you know, work with these theater director, the gallery director, to kind of set, you know, what's the kind of programming. And for them, it's you give them the support to maybe, you know, push the boundary a little bit in a way that, you know, opens horizons and gives them the sort of, they know they have the backing of these community representatives. And I think it's, and you know, that commission just finished its Brea Arts Cultural Master Plan, which I was on the commission as a process was being started. And then the commission recently finalized that. There's a lot of ways to get involved in addition to commissions. There's a lot of usually volunteer opportunities. Mm-hmm. The city solicits input on a lot of issues. I would say most recently and ongoing is the Brea 2050 plan, our general plan update. Right now, the steering committee is in its process. And then starting next year, we'll start seeing documents be produced and the public hearings and all of that part of the process will begin. But there's a lot of opportunities there to just subscribe, go to the website. There's a dedicated website, learn about what we're working on and what the city is working on and how you can be involved. I think it's very important. Yeah. And I think it's just important to understand too, you know, these commissions, they provide advice to the city council, but it's also just another way to give your time to your community that, you know, may have given you a lot and providing the you know, sense of home and sense of place.
And I think most cities really struggle with getting younger people involved because younger people discount their value. They don't think that anybody would be interested in them being on the commission. And often the reverse is true. We're looking desperately for young people to get involved. And so I really do echo what you've said. Like, I hope that people who are in Brea and interested will take a look at that commission and all the other ways to get involved and the volunteer opportunities. And the city sends out that brand line, which is really helpful about information about what's happening, and those cultural events are highlighted, and getting involved in community events is a good first step.
Exactly. And I would just say to those who maybe feel like, oh, I feel too young, never discount an older person's desire to pass on their legacy to the next generation. Many of them crave a mentee that they can mentor. So
I love that.
Be open to it and just put yourself out there. I mean, the worst that happens is a nice city staff member just says, sorry, we don't have a spot for you. Yeah. Or, you know, you can interview for one of these positions and then they'll remain. They maybe don't get the appointment this time around, but they'll remember you as someone who's very interested and engaged.
Absolutely.
I think that's very, very important.
Well, thank you very much. I would love to have a magic wand to bring back local media, because I think it's a real real deficit for our community not to have it. And honestly, not to have some of the amazing things that are happening really highlighted and profiled for everyone to find out about. Thanks for talking Brea politics with me, Blake.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Jody. Appreciate it.